Elliot, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
The people that put on this festival, they started out as just venture capitalists, or at least the people that provided the money, and didn't know initially what they were going to do, right?
Well, yeah, the thing is, they had an ad in the papers, two young men with money looking for something, and Mike Langstorten answered them. He's the producer of Woodstock. And that's how they got together and talked about a music festival and a studio, a music studio in Woodstock, New York.
They were going to do it in Wallkill, New York, which isn't far from Bethel.
It's 25 miles south of Bethel, and they had it all set for Wallkill. They were building their stage infrastructure and thousands of people there, but then Wallkill found out there was 10,000 hippies and homosexuals are going to come to their town to rape their cows. So that's why they decided to, quoting them, that's why they decided to cancel at the last minute. And Woodstock was folded, was finished, and I was in Bethel. I had a little motel at Elmonico, broken down, no air conditioners, and the bank was going to take over. I had a barn theater with 33 actors, and we were doing Chekhov in the nude. Nobody came. And for 9 years, I was doing music festivals on my lawn with canned music, and only one person came, and that was my milkman, Max Jastica, who used to give cheese and eggs and milk to the actors. And then when I was in all the papers there that Woodstock was being canceled, so I called him and I said, of three magic words, I have a permit. And in 15 minutes, he came by helicopter to my place and wanted the permit and how much. And I could have asked for thousands, but I didn't. I said, I paid a dollar for it. But you need rooms. I have 72 broken down rooms. And the bank is taking over anyway, and 33 actors who need jobs. So he agreed, and we agreed on the terms of that. And then he said he would rent the entire place for their headquarters because they need a place to stay, and that was wonderful. Saved my life. And I showed them the 15 acres I had, but it was swamp, well, cesspool water, and they sank in the mud. So that was over. And then I panicked. I said, wait a minute, my milkman, Max Jaska, has a farm up the road with 1,000 acres of green grass and no swamp. So we went there, and Max loved my festivals. He thought maybe 20 people might come. He said, well, $50 a day for the 3 days, and you have to clean up afterwards. Well, it turned out an hour later, we were in a restaurant signing papers that the local radio announced Elliot Tiber is bringing the devastation of Woodstock to our town, and 25,000 tickets were sold. So the price went up to $50,000, but they paid him cash. They didn't care. And it started 2 hours later, trucks and people started arriving and helicopters, and they took over my place. So if not for me, you wouldn't be dressed as a hippie now.
The motel became basically the headquarters for the planning of Woodstock to that point. So obviously you were right there to see this plan evolve. And from what you were describing, it sounds like they really had no idea of the scale of what they were doing, or even if they could pull off anything in their wildest hopes to bring, say, like 50,000 people at that point.
But they were only 24 years old. They really didn't have a working plan that made any sense. They just had this dream, and they hired me to liaison with the local politicians because they kept threatening to shut us down when they heard. In fact, they knew they had 100,000 tickets for sale, and they were afraid to say that number. I mean, I don't know what I would have responded to with 100,000 people, but since we were broken, the town was dead. To me, even five people would have been a blessing.
Well, what did Max Jasger, your dairy farmer friend, think about this expanding scale of what may or may not be happening there on his property?
Well, he was broke, too, and was desperate, and he was glad to get the money. And I don't know how many hundreds of thousands he got, but he paid off his mortgage, and he saved his farm, too. So he was delighted with that. He was a right-wing Republican and a lawyer originally before he became a dairy farmer. But everybody was so nice to him, and I suppose he got high from the fumes like everybody else did. So he's smiling in the documentary.
We're talking with Elliot Tiber. His memoir, Taking Woodstock, talks about his involvement. Well, he brought the Woodstock Festival to Bethel by having the permit and seeking out the promoters at that time. So just to set the scene here a little bit, this motel that you owned is kind of in the Catskills. I imagine that the clientele that was served prior to the Woodstock crowd was rather different.
It was all Jewish. And actually, when I came there, I wasn't smart. It was at the end of the Catskills, mostly 400 hotels, narrowed down to about five, because the airplane came into being and people could fly to Miami or Puerto Rico or Europe cheaper than the hotels. So the only people really left there were people, families who came to the bungalows for summer in a cottage. And the rednecks, we were surrounded by rednecks who went into the woods to shoot Bambi's mother. And they drank beer and they hated it all and were threats, constant threats. So we...
You said earlier that you had the theater troupe that was putting on, what I believe you put it, Chekhov in the Nude?
Yes.
And so here you are, you're going back and forth, actually, from this area with the motel to working as an interior designer in the city.
Yes.
And you are, at the time, closeted, but a gay man, a Jewish man, in rural upstate New York, and you're bringing, by the person that has the permit and is the local person that people know, you're bringing all these hippies and freaks to this quiet area. What did the community think about that as this started to ramp up?
Funny you mentioned freaks. I didn't see even one, but okay. I was the only freak, I think. Well, I was a New York decorator, and they must have thought I said hairdresser, so they painted faggot go home on the walls of my hotel and swastikas. But I painted it over white. And so the locals were the residents there didn't like it. They were very upset. It was the local tourists that were there that gave out, shared their food and places to sleep with the kids and blankets. They were the nice ones.
When the concert actually became national news through the promotion, through the ramping up of the concert, and it became apparent that this was going to work, there were going to be a lot of people showing up. Was that something that really concerned not only the local townspeople that just didn't want anything different, but also kind of the people in charge in that area?
Well, there were no people. There were no authorities in our area. There was no zoning. That's how come I had a permit. The day after the people arrived, they canceled the permit, but it was useless. And what happened was that the local politicians demanded bribes, and they got, and then they even wanted more and more. And the Tuesday before the festival, it was supposed to start Friday, one local politician came over and demanded $100,000 or he would close it down. And he was well-connected, and... that was like $1 million today. So Mike Lang, the producer, who always smiled and said, cool and groovy and no worry, Elliot, didn't tell people to come out now or else they'll stop us. So I went in. I was never on radio. I was shy. I'm not shy now. And I said who I am, and I said to everybody, if you want 3 days of peace and music, don't wait till Friday. Please come out now. Then I added in a little something. I couldn't help myself. And I said, and don't worry, if you don't have tickets, it doesn't matter. It's all free. So because of me, they broke down those fences. The producer didn't like that, but I didn't know they already made a deal the night before with Warner Brothers to make a movie, so they were okay. The next morning, 3 a.m, we hear car noises and hollering, and my father and I took baseball bats to protect ourselves. We thought it's the hoodlums again. But instead, we went out on the highway, and it was a highway road. It was two-lane road, and... it was 5 lanes now with white headlights coming up from the city or from all over the country, kids on Volkswagen buses and painted with flowers and on the roofs and guitars and singing. We're on our way to Woodstock. And within 24 hours, there were about 300,000 people. And the day after that, by Friday morning, there was 500,000 traffic totally stopped. The governor had to close the New York Thruway because it was one big parking lot all the way back to New York City, 100 miles. And to me, it was heaven. It was wonderful.
How did it make you feel about yourself and what you were trying to do? You were threatened, and you said that people painted swastikas on the doors. And here there are, you know, over 250,000 free-spirited, youthful people coming out or meeting in this one place. Did that change your view of yourself and your role?
Yes. When Richie Havens sang that song, Freedom, and it resonated with everybody there, it became sort of an anthem. I realized that's what this was doing, was bringing me freedom. I didn't care. My parents saw me kissing a couple of guys, and I didn't care. What I felt was self-worth, self-esteem, that I could pull off something like this. It just amazed me. And it gave me enough money to live on for 10 years, so I decided to become a writer and a humorist, and I started doing that. And within a year later, I moved to Belgium. I met this Belgian guy in New York, a theater director, and I moved there with him, and we both wrote together. And within a year, I had my own TV comedy series there. My first feature film was in the Academy Awards as a finalist for Best Foreign Film. So that's what Woodstock did for me. It just enabled me. I didn't feel fat and ugly anymore. I wasn't fat and ugly, but that's how I felt.
Did you get to see much of the festival? Obviously, you had a lot going on.
None of it. I was the only one out of a 500,000 people who didn't. I turned my hotel into a triage because I volunteered nurses and doctors. Kids were walking broken glass, having bad acid trips, so we needed a place for them. There were a few hospital tents, but nothing to, enough. So my place, I held 18,000 people in the trees, even in hammocks we got donated and taken care of, so I couldn't get to the festival. But the music bounced off the lake. We're right on the White Lake and the 5 Mile Lake, and it bounced off the lake, and I heard the entire festival. And when I heard Richie Havens start the festival with Freedom, there I was in the mud, delivering a baby, actually, in all that mud. I knew then that the Freedom was what it was all about.
What was the baby's name?
I don't know. This girl came in on a motorcycle and a leather jacket and all that rain and mud, and plopped down in front of me. I was in the mud putting bandages on a kid, and I see, and spread her legs and staring at me and screaming. So I see a baby's head coming out, and I start to pull it out. I know nothing about no birth in Miss Scarlet, to quote Gone with the Wind. And I'm holding that baby, and the cord is attached, and everyone is screaming, and kids dancing around, Woodstock baby, Woodstock daddy. And my mother was shrieking, the nice religious Jewish lady, to her this was upsetting because the girl was of color. I don't know what, maybe American Indian or maybe black, I don't know. And anyway, the police, finally volunteer doctor came from the army with a helicopter and a cop, and the cop said, whose baby is it? And who's the father? And they all looking at me holding the baby. My mother says, no, not him, he's Jewish. So she didn't accept that. Anyway, and I don't know, the baby, that was the end of it. They took her away, and 2 weeks afterwards, she came in a taxi and thanked me, and the baby was fine. She was fine. I never got her number. I mean, I was still coming down from my trips. It took about 5 weeks to come down.
The book is called Taking Woodstock, written by Elliot Tiber, about his experiences involved with the festival and, of course, the movie as well. Elliot, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you so much.
That was Elliot Tiber from 2009. I interviewed him on the release of the movie Taking Woodstock, which was based on his memoir. It was directed by Academy Award filmmaker Ang Lee. Elliot Tiber passed away this month, just ahead of the 47th anniversary of the Woodstock Music Festival. It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. We'll be back right after this.